Otherwise, there would be no meaning to bhakti yoga. If one is not situated in the same transcendental position with the Lord, one cannot serve the Supreme Lord. To be a personal assistant to a king, one must acquire the qualifications. Thus, the qualification is to become Brahman, or freed from all material contamination. It is said in the Vedic literature, Brahmaiva san Brahmapyeti. One can attain the supreme Brahman by becoming Brahman. This means that one must qualitatively become one with the Brahman. By attainment of Brahman, one does not lose his eternal Brahman identity as an individual soul. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta Swami translation report to the Bhagavad Gita as it is chapter 14, text 26, in the matter of the three modes of material nature. Harihi Om Tat Sat. So here the 14th chapter describes all about different modes of nature. Activities are influenced by the modes of nature, mode of tamas, mode of rajas, and mode of satya, ignorance, passion, and goodness. The different kinds of activities are under different modes. Just like charity. Someone may give charity with no respect, no knowledge about what is meant for. Some beggar comes up and says, you know, give me some money. So just he takes some money and throws, like, get lost. So that kind of indiscriminate charity could be in the mode of ignorance. But like now there's elections in Australia. So probably different political parties are going to the businessmen asking for donations. So the businessman may give a donation thinking that if this party gets elected, then somehow I'll benefit out of that. Maybe I'll get a license, and if you get licenses, you get all kinds of, I don't know what they can get away with here, but if you're giving a charity an idea to get something back in return, material for your charity, then it's charity in the mode of passion. If somebody is giving a charity that just right time, right place, with the right circumstances, in order to help, it's going to be well used, then that's charity in the mode of goodness. So, but all these things produce different kinds of karmas or reactions. So Krishna is advising us that we should come up to the transcendental platform. So this is like if somebody gives out Krishna prasadam. Not only is he giving something material, healthy, but also giving people spiritual upliftment. So charity done to Krishna, or in the name of Krishna, that would be again on the transcendental platform. So this verse is saying that whatever we do, we can engage ourselves in a full devotional service. Bhakti Jogena Sevate, offering our service in Bhakti Yoga. Then it becomes Saguna Samachita Aitan, becomes transcendental to the modes of nature. This is called Sudha Sattva, or pure goodness. Lord Chaitanya, some of his associates, they were praying that we don't want to do pious activities, we don't want to do impious activities. We simply want to serve Radha and Govinda. This service to Radha and Govinda is transcendental. If you do good karma, then you have to stay around in the material world to enjoy it. It's like if you win, sometimes they offer a prize, you can go to Spain and watch the bullfights. If you want to take advantage of that, then you have to go to Spain and sit there and watch the bullfight, otherwise that's what the prize is. I don't know how many people want to go to Spain and watch them kill a bull. So, in the material world, to get your good karma, then you still have to be here. And if you're here, then there's every chance of accumulating more bad karma or suffering also for the bad karma. course, if you do bad karma, you're definitely going to be back here. So like that, there's like in the prison house, you do your behave well, you can get some perks. Maybe you get to, I don't know what perks they give in the prison house, so maybe get to watch TV or something, or whatever they, I don't know what they do. You can become a monitor and you can walk around outside your cell and do some things. You're still in prison. So the real thing is to get out of prison, and that only happens by devotional service. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur had a disciple who was a sannyasi, and he wanted to circumambulate the Ganges. That means completely go around the Ganges, 360 degrees. So this circumambulation of the Ganges, which is how long? 2,500 kilometers. Calcutta to Delhi is about 1,400 kilometers, but then the Ganges is up in Gomukh. And from Calcutta, 200 kilometers south to the Bay of Bengal, Sagar Island. So maybe 1,500 or 2,000 kilometers, more or anywhere, a little less than 2,000 probably. But so that means going all the way around it would be 4,000 kilometers. Very big pious activity. But his guru said, don't do it. He said, better you preach Krishna consciousness, that's transcendental. And you can be helping other conditioned souls to get back to Godhead. But the disciple, they didn't listen to his guru, and he went and circumambulated the Ganges. Took him over a year to walk 4,000 kilometers or whatever it was. So then he came back and he was very proud that I did this. I circumambulated the Ganges. Then Bhakti Vishnupad Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur told him that, okay, you didn't follow my instruction, I'm demoting you. You take off your sannyasi robes, you're no longer a sannyasi, you're back to a brahmachari. And you can wash the pots for 2 months as humbling while you're doing all this thing without the authorization of the guru. Some people, they have different priorities. They think it's important to do some pious activity, but pious activities and karma kanda, they're all within the three modes of nature. But if you do devotional service, it's Brahma Bhuvaya Kalpate, it's in the Brahman level, spiritual. So that's why Lord Chaitanya, he was advising everyone to do pure devotional service, not to do mundane activities. One time when Lord Chaitanya was 3 years old, he was playing with his friends and he happened to wander by. Murari Gupta was giving a class. So that time, Murari Gupta was giving a class on Astanga Yoga, teaching the people how to do pranayama. We also sometimes teach people pranayama and hatha yoga, but not with the idea that that's really the effective way to get self-realization. More that it has some value just to, for your health, for your peace of mind. But ultimately we like to help them graduate to the best of all the yogas, which is Bhakti Yoga. But anyway, the way that Murari Gupta was presenting was as if the Hatha Yoga was the supreme. He wasn't explaining that there's Bhakti Yoga. The Lord Chaitanya became very upset with him that he's being a pure devotee. Why is he simply telling about this physical yoga without any reference at all to Bhakti Yoga? So when Murari Gupta, he was, you know, saying, okay, you do the Vishnu, you know, mudra, and then you do your pranayama, breathe slowly up your left nostril. Then Lord Chaitanya go, Breathing slowly up your nostril. Breathe. Count to five and breathe up. Then hold your breath for 10 or 20 and then breathe out in 10. Something like that. So, whatever he would say, Lord Chaitanya was mimicking. Breathe up for 5, hold it for 20, breathe out for 10. So everybody's cracking up. Here, this little toddler, it's whatever he's doing, he's mimicking. So his whole yoga class was very much disturbed. I mean, was already distracted by the antics of Lord Chaitanya. So they're all cracking up and laughing. And so Mari Gupta got very short-tempered. Who is this boy? Whose son is he? Is he a Brahmin son? Why is he acting like this so disrespectfully? The Lord Chaitanya, this little three-year-old child, looks at him and says, I'm going to see you today and teach you a lesson. And then walked off. So they ended the class. Meanwhile, Lord Chaitanya went home and then he dressed, he put on a yellow dhoti, put on a chadar, put on some necklace, put on some earrings, put some kajal, some this black eyeliner underneath his eyes, put on bracelets, armlets, put a turban on his head, put a peacock feather in his turban, and he walked over to Mari Gupta's house. Not very far from Lord Chaitanya's house, maybe about 300-400 meters. We take the devotees. How many of you have seen Mari Gupta's house? Sena Navadev Parikrama? Only 4, 5, 6. You didn't go. So how many like to go on Navadev Parikrama someday and see all the holy places of Lord Chaitanya's pastime? Hari Bol. May Krishna fulfill your desires. So meanwhile, it was lunch time. Mari Gupta was sitting down to take his lunch. Oh, Lord Chaitanya also put on ankle belts. And he came walking over to Mari Gupta's house and he walked right into the house. Ching, 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 ching. He stood at the doorway looking at Mari Gupta. So Mari Gupta is eating his rice and vegetables and Lord Chaitanya shouts out, Murari Gupta! Very loud voice. Mari Gupta is like shocked. What's going on here? She get up. She's this little boy. Little Nimai, but now he's dressed up very beautifully. He said, you interrupted your pure bhakti. You're a pure devotee of Krishna. You're a spiritual master. You should be teaching pure bhakti. Because you interrupted your bhakti, I'm interrupting your lunch. Don't do this again. I'm expecting you to only preach pure bhakti. Then Lord Chaitanya walked off. How does a 3-year-old know what's the difference, pure bhakti or mixed bhakti or anything else? So Mari Gupta is thinking, what does this all mean? But then he was thinking, reflecting, and he looks just like Krishna, only he's yellow color and Krishna's blue color. Peacock and the hair, and the yellow dhoti, all the jewelry. And then he said, of course, Advaita Acharya had prayed for Krishna to come down in Kali Yuga as a devotee. So this must be Krishna has come. Why didn't I realize before, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Gauranga is Krishna? I was just thinking he's an ordinary village boy. Come again. Then he went over to the house of Jagannath Mishra and Sachi Mata. At that time, they were holding Lord Gauranga. Jagannath Mishra, Gauranga's father, holding him very tight, smelling his hair, kissing him. And the mother would take And she'd hold him and give all her love and affection. Then Jagannath Mishra took back and he's giving. Both are showering the divine child with so much affection. They didn't notice that Murari Gupta had walked right into the house. He's just looking at Gauranga. Then he's sure, definitely. All the symptoms of Krishna. Only his different color. And suddenly Jagannath Mishra noticed that Murari Gupta is standing there. Now Murari Gupta is the number one physician in Navadvip. Sometimes devotees ask you to be a doctor for Krishna. Well, Murari Gupta was a doctor. But after hours he was also teaching his, giving his bhakti yoga classes. This time he tried hatha yoga too, but anyway. Jagannath Mishra questioned Murari Gupta, what is the greatest physician of Navadvip doing in our house? What is the, how do we get this honor? What can we do for you? But Murari Gupta just has his eyes fixed on Lord Chaitanya. Jagannath Mishra stood up, was standing next to him with folded hands. He grabbed Jagannath Mishra's hands. He said, you know, or the first thing is Murari Gupta then paid his obeisances and offered obeisance to Lord Chaitanya. Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha Jagaritaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namaha. Then he started going around Sachi Mata and Jagannath Mishra and Lord Gauranga. Again and again, four times parikrama. Then Jagannath, what is going on here? Why are you walking around us? Then Jagannath Mishra grabbed his hand and said, listen, I want to reveal to you this. You are the most fortunate person in the entire universe! Your son is... Let's just start crying. Cut, censor. Mommy, I'm hungry! So Murari Gupta could never reveal to Jagannath Mishra who his son was. And he walked off. Lord Chaitanya is coming, he's Krishna, but he's coming as a devotee, he's coming in disguise. Like this, Lord Gauranga was saying, preach pure bhakti yoga to Murari Gupta. So, this idea that the bhakti yoga is transcendental, he was encouraging his devotees to preach the transcendental message. When we practice bhakti yoga, we are beyond the transcendental platform. Krishna is transcendental to the three modes of nature. We're offering our service to Krishna. It goes directly to Him. So it transcends the three modes of nature. Produces no good or bad material result. It's transcendental. The service directly is giving our spiritual credits. Prabhupada used to say, everything you do for Krishna, he writes it down in his little book. So we'd like to have a lot of entries in the little book. How many of you want to be in Krishna's little book? Got one book for each one of you. Krishna, you don't want to be in his book? So we're trying to offer our service to Krishna. And this, when we have enough credit, it's called sukriti. It's more than good karma, it's spiritual credit. So we have enough credit, then we get a free ticket back to Godhead. It's like frequent flyer points or something. Get enough, you can get a free ticket. So, these are your devotional service bonus points. Keeps building up until you have enough that you can get different kinds of blessings. Bonafide spiritual master, to render more devotional service, to get realization of Krishna, to get ecstatic love for Krishna, to get pure love for Krishna. So like this. Lord Chaitanya described it as like watering the plant. You water the root of the devotional creeper and it keeps on growing and growing. outside of this material world. If somebody surrenders to Krishna, they can immediately experience relief. Normally in the material world, we're being pressured by this huge, up to 100 births of karma pushing down on us. That's a constant pressure. Constantly we're suffering, enjoying different kinds of karmic reactions. But when we are engaging in devotional service, when we surrender to Krishna, then Prabhupada says, like when the fan is spinning, you turn off the fan. Maybe it still spins for a while, but gradually slowing down, the momentum decreases and it stops. Otherwise we're continually burning karma, making new karma, so there's always a constant kind of a pressure on us. So when we are surrendering to Krishna, we're pulling the plug on our karmic deposits, and gradually everything starts to become very peaceful. And so we get a feeling of relief from our pressure of the karma. Of course, even as an initiated devotee, you should follow the four principles and chant the 16 rounds to get the full benefit. Although anything you do in the field of karma, there will also be getting reactions for that. The idea is that someone is initiated, knows how to do everything for Krishna, therefore they don't produce more karma. They follow this verse. They're staying on the Brahman platform. We hope that everybody can... What time the deity is open? 8:30?
9.
9. What time this class should go to?
9.
Hare Krishna. So like this, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was encouraging his followers not to do good karmas, not to do bad karmas, but to do devotional service. That's what Srila Prabhupada also brought here to the West. The people can perform devotional service purely, whether you're living in your home or whether you're living in an ashram. Grihe tako bone tako sadahari bole dako. Grihe tako bone tako sadahari bole dako. So whether one is living in the house or whether they're living in the ashram or the forest, everyone should chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Most people, they don't realize what a great good fortune it is to have a human form of life. And with this human form of life, we have the option, the possibility to very easily render pure devotional service. The prayers of Lord Shiva to Krishna in the chapter in the 10th canto about the deliverance of Banasur. Krishna fights with Banasur. Then Shiva says that people don't understand that they're the eternal soul. They don't understand that as the eternal embodied soul, we should be engaging ourselves in devotional service. Is it somebody, having been taken the human birth, simply makes us the goal of their life, sense gratification? They think that gratifying their senses is going to make them happy. Actually, they're atma vanchaka. They're cheating themselves. They're the ones who are getting cheated. They had the opportunity to get the highest liberation, highest perfection, but instead they're cheating themselves out of this transcendental blessing. Maybe some of you know somebody who is being cheated like this, losing on the opportunity to get liberation and just running after material sense gratification as happiness, when actually the sense gratification also causes us to suffer. Whether we like it or not, sometimes because of our karma we have to enjoy and sometimes we have to suffer. Nobody's complaining much when they're enjoying, when they're suffering, they wonder why. That's why in this material world a lot of people are suffering, some people are enjoying. Krishna says he's not directly involved. He oversees things, everything is his energy, but things are going according to the laws of karma. I read in a newspaper a couple of days ago how Mother Teresa, when she was helping the poor people, she saw so many people suffering. She actually had expressed some doubt that maybe there is really no God. She started to doubt the existence of God. Why do people have to suffer like this? Why is God allowing people to suffer? I was surprised because she's known as a very saintly lady, while she was doubting the existence of God. But that problem is most people don't know how the material world works. It's not like God is personally or Krishna is personally causing people to suffer. It's just how the laws of karma work. If they've caused many other people to suffer for a long enough period, then they also get a reaction which will put them in suffering. About 20 years ago in India, it came out that people were dying on the street, they were getting paralyzed and rolling in the street in Calcutta. And the government investigated and found out that somebody who was making vegetable oil, he was taking used mobile oil from the filling stations and mixing that with the edible oil to be able to make a little extra money. But someone who was mixing put too much in, so instead of just kind of blowing out your liver and just have gradually killing you, well, you wouldn't notice it so much. They put so much that the people got paralyzed, were rolling in the street, were going blind, dying, and all of them, the one common thing, they were all buying oil from the same shop. You think, now what does that guy get who caused so many people paralysis, blindness, death, and he's been doing this for years and years, mixing totally inedible mobile oil with his edible oil, what usually was in a small enough quantity that people wouldn't notice it. They just thought it had a little tangy flavor, their oil. So what kind of, you know, and then it's, if he ends up, you know, in some really horrible situation, what do you expect? We don't know what people's previous karmas, why they're in some horrible situation. It's not just some accident. It's not that out of some kind of vendetta God is making people suffer. Just that lets the karma roll the way it rolls. So there's some businessmen like that, maybe they're doing all kinds of... India banned importing any kind of what you call animal fat from, because the people are making a what you call a soap factory next to a vanaspati. Vanaspati means imitation ghee. So they were testing the imitation ghee and finding out it had animal fat from the slaughterhouse. So how it's supposed to be vegetable ghee. So they found the people who were making this soap business, they were sneaking over some of this animal fat, which is very cheap, and mixing it with the vegetable oils. So indirectly, they're also supporting the slaughter of the animals, and they're cheating the people. So like there's so many people doing so many weird things in the world that eventually karma comes back to them. But as a devotee, we don't want anyone to suffer. We're not in the police force. It's not us to decide who should suffer, who isn't. But if somebody is in suffering, we also like to relieve them from that suffering and to help them to get back to Krishna, to help them to be freed from all this suffering. That's why we're teaching bhakti yoga. If somebody does bhakti yoga, they'll be free from all the karma. Once Chapal Gopal, because he had offended Srivas Thakur, he had developed leprosy, and he had asked Lord Chaitanya for forgiveness. He says, not me to forgive. You offended Srivas, you have to get forgiven by Srivas. So then the devotees went over and told Srivas, look at this, Chapal Gopal offended you some years ago, now he's got leprosy. You should kindly forgive him so that he will be freed from this this curse of doing all these offenses to you. But then Srivas, he was so humble, said, who can offend me? I am lower than a worm and stool. I am the lowest of the low. Nobody can offend somebody as fallen and low as me. It's okay, you know you're very humble, Srivas. You know you consider yourself Lord. But Lord Chaitanya considers that you're a devotee, and Chapal Gopal offended you, and if you don't forgive him, Chapal Gopal is going to end up suffering and suffering and suffering for so many births and births, millions of who knows how long. So if you want Chapal Gopal to suffer, then Shiva said, no, I don't want anybody to suffer. You want to suffer on your behalf? No, of course not. Then you better go there and forgive him. Okay, I don't want anybody to suffer on my behalf. But Srivas was so humble, he didn't think anybody could offend him, but when it was presented tactfully, then he went there, found out Chapal Gopal. Chapal Gopal fell at his feet, grabbed his feet, said, forgive me for my offenses. I didn't know you're such an exalted Vaishnava. I committed an offense to you. Please forgive me. Then Srivas pray that Krishna, please forgive him if there's any offense. Then immediately Lord Chaitanya appeared there, picked up Chapal Gopal, embraced him, he was cured from his leprosy. Somebody asked me, what about the different groups doing healing? So Lord Chaitanya had cured many people with terminal diseases and leprosy and things just by giving them a hug. So then Chapal Gopal was admitted into the Sankirtan movement and he became one of Lord Chaitanya's devotees. So like this, we want to free people from their suffering, and this is the best process. There's no higher sacrifice you can do to get freed from suffering. Bhagavad Gita says, Svapam apyasya dharmasya trayato mahato goyat. Even by a little practice of devotional service, you can be saved from the greatest of dangers. So when we give people prasada, when we teach them to chant the mantras, when we teach them to do some devotional service, we're actually freeing them from unlimited karmas, bad karmas. Nectar of Devotion says that when you clap your hands in the kirtan, the lines in your hand, which normally indicate your karma, they start changing. They become better situated. And you get a chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Then just like when you're clapping your hands in the kirtan and dancing, and just like in the field, like in Asia, the birds swarm and they just go onto the fields and eat the rice. So they have kids there, begging tin cans and clapping their hands, and then the birds fly off. You have to see it. I don't know if they have it here, but it's like beehiving. It's like millions of birds. You can hear them, like boom, and they're just all eating so many grains, so that if you let them eat, they'll finish off the whole rice crop. So then, and they all fly away. So as you're chanting and clapping in kirtan, just like those so many millions of birds are flying, so many of your bad karmas are flying away.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama.
Yamadutas, we're not the police force. Prabhupada said we're like the welfare agency of the government. We're just seeing how to benefit people, how to free them from all these karmas, how to free them from the suffering. Of course, some people are so much in the modes of nature that they don't realize that there's another alternative. So they even become angry if you suggest that they change what they're doing. So one has to be very tactful. Sometimes it's a gradual process even to bring them up to the level where they can understand these points. This is a very confidential information. Most people don't understand about devotional service. They don't teach this to the envious, to the very much tamasic people. But we assume everybody coming to the temple here is already pious devotees, so revealing his secrets. So I came here for the big festival tomorrow here in Sydney, the Festival of India. They told me 15,000 people attended last year, so it's maybe one of the biggest Janmashtamis in the world. I went to Bhaktivedanta Manor, they had about 60,000. But 15,000 is also quite an impressive number. So I'm looking forward to seeing what happens tomorrow. And to participate. So like this, devotees are working in this different the festivities, the organized things. It's all devotional services to Krishna. So they're all giving, all their activities actually transcendental. So whether the one's working for Krishna, or they're chanting for Krishna, or they're meditating on Krishna, or if you're eating Krishna prasadam, all these activities are transcendental. In the eating prasadam part, many people like, but not everybody is acclimatized to the prasadam because it's vegetarian. But if eventually they can have a taste, then the idea we want to have, let people develop a higher spiritual taste, and that way they'll be able to transcend these lower modes of nature. So if you give a time, you can ask questions. Anyone needs papers? Amber.
Can you talk about Yamaduchis and what happens and what they do, what goes on the other side of you? Or not?
When people have an overwhelming accumulation of bad karmas and they don't have any spiritual credit to their account, then so normally when we pass away, when we die, then die means the body dies, soul never dies. It can immediately be transferred to another body. But if somebody has so many bad karmas that they need to burn off some of the bad karmas, and then they're going to get a little bit better body, kind of clean their slate a little bit, if not totally. So then the Yamadutas take them, and they have got a certain planet called Narak, which is for rehabilitation of conditioned souls who have an excess of bad karma to burn off. In the fifth canto of Bhagavatam, there's a description of some of the standard rehabilitation programs they have. We've probably all been there, but we don't remember right now. Like places like Kumbhi Park, Andhra Mission, a few names that come to mind. So they're that staff that brings people. We don't, hopefully never have to see them, but people who have a lot of bad karma, then they get to see these Yamadutas. We read about them because, like in the book Coming Back, Ajamil was, named his son Narayana. So he was always chanting Narayana, his son's name, and by doing that, he was inadvertently, unconsciously getting freed from many bad karmas. So then when the Yamadutas came to take him, because otherwise he was a thief, he was a robber, he abandoned his family and went with kind of a prostitute, and in this way he was committed many vikarmas, bad karmic activities. So the Yamadutas thought that he fits within their domain, their program. But then the Vishnudutas came and said, because he was chanting the name Narayana just when he left his body, just when he died, so he's technically freed from all the karmas because he remembered the name of Narayana. And they said, give us a break. He was calling his son, who was Narayana also, but he wasn't really calling the Narayana. Well, anyway, he called Narayana. It doesn't matter whether it's the name of the Lord is not different. So there was a little bit of a tug of war, who gets him? And the Vishnudutas, of course, in these situations, they always win out. So, the Ajamil, he was allowed to live. But he saw this thing, this arguing going on between the Yamadutas and the Vishnudutas. Then he came back and he realized that somehow I got a reprieve. So he went to Badrinath, which is a holy place in the Himalayas, and he was chanting there and practicing Krishna consciousness. So then he went back to Godhead at the end. There's a movie, it's an old movie, 10 years old or something, called Ghost.
Yes.
So little black guys that came and pulled him out of the body and they went.
Yeah.
Those are like Yamadutas, so kind of a graphic. And when they went up into the light, the white, that means they're going to heavenly planet or something. There's an interesting pastime in the Padma Purana that says the Yamadutas were sent by Yamaraj to get someone. His name was some Madhu Singh or something, I forget the exact name, but pretty common Indian name. So then they went and they to the address that was given, but they couldn't see anybody there. But the next door neighbor had the same name. They thought maybe there was a mistake at the office, and they arrested that guy, dragged him out of his body and took him to Yamaraj. But he was not time to die, it was the wrong guy. So then he was put on the dock, and then Yamaraj said, what, this is the wrong guy, why are you bringing him? Well, no, this particular address you sent us, we didn't find anybody there, he's the next door neighbor, had the same name, we thought maybe some mistake. This guy's completely shaking, and it's in a subtle body. His subtle body at that time is shaking, and he's seeing all the Yamadutas were looking very fearsome, very muscular, hairy bodies, fangs, and different kind of animals, humans, half-humans, different kind of some wild animals, but looking very intelligent, not like animals, but having animal bodies, looking at them. Well, you know, which rehabilitation program is going to take him up? says, look here, he's completely freaked out. He says, this is the worst place, I never want to come here, you know. And then Yamaraj chastised his messenger, what are you doing, you see? Oh, I know why you couldn't see that person, because in his house he has a tulsi plant, and he has a dachi plant, these are holy plants, and so it makes him invisible for you. And you see, don't bring people to me who have worshipping tulsi, who are worshipping that dachi, who are worshipping Krishna and Vishnu, who chant the names of Vishnu, who, you know, don't tell lies and things. Don't bring those people. You're going to bring the sinful ones to me. And so this guy is like noting down, don't bring, okay, these are definitely things. I'm going to chant Hare Krishna. I'm never going to tell lies. I don't want to come back here again. No way. So they sent him back, and he came back, but he could remember everything. He said, wow, I'm never going to go there. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So he got really inspired to chant Hare Krishna. So again, we've heard that chanting Hare Krishna protects you from going to see the Yamaduta. I wouldn't be too interested in wanting to see them, because...
Okay. I just wanted to know what they were, because I've heard of them, but I don't understand.
So Yamaraj is the one who judges people's karma. So if you're getting a promotion, then you don't have to see them. They just directly promote you. But when you're going for the rehabilitation program, then they drag you down, you go in front of Yamaraj, he judges your case. You can see like a movie in front of you, all the different karmas you did. He does a little karmic review. Then he decides, okay, this is what, you go to this program, and after that you're going to take this birth. If you acted like an animal and you're going to take a pig's birth, then they'll let you go into a particular place where you can kind of swim in a big cesspool of stool and urine and pus and everything. And then eventually they'll come and they'll feed you some nice fresh stool. When you actually start to differentiate that this stool is better than that one, then you're ready to take a pig's body and you can eat stool.
Yeah,
because just to go from human to pig would be kind of too much of a culture shock. So they kind of... They prepare you for that. So your subtle body gets a little prepared.
Wow.
Sorry, a little grotesque there, but not like it is, man. Okay, we got 6 minutes. Can devotional... Can devotional service be anything one does? In other words, regular work, cleaning the house, studying, etc. Or is devotional service only that done for the temple, spiritual organization? Well, if your house is a temple, then cleaning the house. If you put Krishna in your house and you dedicate your house as a temple for Krishna, then cleaning the house would also be for Krishna. From your work, if you're giving some percentage of your work to the Krishna service, if you're seeing that in order to survive in the material world you're working, could be a neutral work, or if you're giving some percentage to Krishna, then it can also be a devotional service. It's the same thing. If you're studying, if you're offering that I want to study to get a degree, to get a better job, so I can do better service for Krishna, or I can get this skill that I can use for Krishna, so then the studying can also be a devotional service. How we connect it with Krishna consciousness. Under the guidance of the spiritual master, the Diksha or Siksha Guru, then we can also dovetail what we're doing. So it's not only what's directly done for the temple, but it could be a broader range of things in devotional service. During chanting, we have to have one finger pointing out. The pointing finger. Does it have any meaning? Thanks, Hari Bol. This is a very confidential subject. In one of the Samhitas, I was researching about the chanting of the holy name. And I came across some quotations in one of the Samhitas, special treatise on chanting. They said when you do japa and you feel the beads There's different kinds of beings like Rudraksha, Tulsi, Spatik, Sandalwood, Radhakunda, Earth, like this. So there's different kinds of beads, and it's also said that how you hold the beads with your fingers, says that this finger is the cursing finger. So if somebody wants to curse somebody, then they can hold a bead with their thumb and this finger, and they can curse that person. So if somebody's got their finger that's normally out inside the bead thing and looking at you really angrily, you might wonder what's happening here, you know. Person wants to curse me. But since we don't, Vaishnavas don't believe in cursing as a principle, so we just disarm that finger. That's like out of the picture there. Then there's middle fingers for all perfection, the ring fingers for shanti, for peace, the little fingers for siddhi or mystic power. If somebody's suddenly during the japa session, they start floating up into the air, then they may be chanting on their little finger and their thumb. It's pretty tricky to do that. Yeah, it's not so easy. It says that even the different fingers we use has a different effect in the japa. So we just use the middle finger normally. If you're ready, you want peace and you're not very disturbed, you could use the ring finger. Otherwise, this is for sarva dharma, all perfection, sarva dharma siddhi. It's for mystic cities. Last question. What is the reason of our birth? If we were already a part and parcel of Godhead, even now we're a part and parcel of Godhead, but Godhead is independent, so we also have our independence. But somehow we misused our independence, and here we are. We're in the material world where we can experience some kind of virtual independence from God. He's not visibly here. In the spiritual world, His presence is very visible and very, very much present in everybody's knowledge. But here things are going on by laws of karma, so it seems as if He's not here. Sometimes He does interfere for His devotees, but otherwise for non-devotees, He just lets the karmas take their role, take their toll. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, this question comes up. It's basically a different way of presenting how we get here in the material world. Exactly what our position was before we got here is slightly different. It's an individual case for each one. So we have, there's many different kinds of circumstances that can happen. Krishna is ever expanding. Some of His expansions come out in the Brahmajyoti. Some particles in the Brahmajyoti fall down into the material world. Like that, there's people who are manifesting in the spiritual world. But somehow, which exactly was the way that we got in the material world, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, we shouldn't really worry about that. So like say somebody falls off a ship in shark infested waters. Here around Australia, there's a few places that have shark infested water. Say you were going to the barrier reef, as I just came from Cairns, say you were going out to one of the reefs to scuba dive. On the way, somehow you fell off the boat, and there was all these fins sticking out of the water, swimming around you. Are you going to first have a debate? How did I fall off the boat? Who's responsible? What were the circumstances? Are you first going to get out of the shark-infested waters, get on the boat, then you can figure it out, how did I fall off it? So like that. We should first try to get out of this material world. Once we come back to our original spiritual understanding, it'll be very clear to us what happened and how we got here. Right now, we have got spiritual amnesia, and we don't know what it was like exactly, what was our position, where were we before we came here. Jai, but we'll remember once we go back. So right now, the real focus should be how we get back. We know we have independence, we have free will, somehow we misused it, that's why we're here. Jai Lala Gopinathi.
Jai!
Jagannathi Subhadra Ki.
Jai!
Gaur Nithai Ki.
Jai!